Okay, 498, we're up to Mizmor Nun Zayin. Rosh Chodesh Adar, Mishnichnas Adar, Mar Bim Bisimcha. Baruch Atah Adonai Eloheinu Melech Haolam Shehakol Nehyeh B'Dvarai. Pikudi Hashem Yishar Mesamech Elev. The biggest simcha is to learn. Yeah?
This morning they said, Hichi Lats Torah, Nafshi
Mimavis, yeah? Okay, so you have a pshat?
No, I don't, but I had to look twice to make sure I was saying the right word.
Obviously you are. Okay, obviously there's a difference. What is the difference? Ki itzalta nafshi moris na ki chilatzta. Ki chilatzta. It's interesting, the letters have to change. He's saying something very interesting because chilatzta, the word chilatzta refers to chilutz atzomais. So chilutz means to loosen. To loosen, I mean, chilutz atzomais, let's put it aside for a second. Chalitzas hanoal. Chalitzas hanoal means to loosen the shoe. You undo the straps, and by opening up the straps of the shoe has been loosened. Chalitzas hanoal, we loosely translate it to remove the shoe. Or really, some say more accurately means to loosen the straps of the shoe. So then the question over here is, what does it mean when we say on Rosh Chodesh benching? Chilutz atzamos. What does that mean? So there are many that want to say that it means that the bones should be loosened in their sockets. It means it's a balance. You don't want the bones to be too tightly in their sockets.
The modern Hebrew word for exercise.
Oh, exactly. So soto means you go jogging. You go jogging, you walk, you jog, you do exercise, so you loosen. If you don't exercise, then the bones become too rigid.
As opposed to bone on bone.
Bone on bone at school?
Bone on bone is a problem.
It's a problem.
All the knee replacements are bone on bone.
Bone on bone. Yeah. You want it to be...
joints, bone on bone.
It's too close. You want there to be some looseness.
You need something in between.
A buffer.
The buffer, gel,
you need something to loot. It has to be a little bit looser. Okay, so that's how some want to translate the word chilutz atzamos, means to you go exercise. Exercise, you soften up the bones a little bit, the joints are not so stiff. Others want to say the word chilutz atzamos means just the opposite. It means we're taking a word, we're manipulating it, we're turning it 180 degrees. Yishrosh, yisharesh, it means the bones should be firmly insert it into their sockets. They should not be too loose, because if the bones are too loose, that's also if it's too loose, it's also no good. So you can take a word, and we do this very, very often, where the word goes 180 degrees and you go from yishrosh to take root, yisharesh to uproot. So someone to say chilutz atzamos means that the bones should be firmly inserted tightly in their sockets. So we go mikotz ala kotz. Either the bone should be loose or should be tight. Obviously, there's a balance, because it's like Goldilocks. If it's too soft, it's no good. If it's too hard, it's no good. If it's too tight in the sockets, it's no good. And if it's too loose, it's no good. Everything has to be in the proper balance. Chilutz atzamos. But I think what Michal is saying is another pshat, and I really like this, is that we have this very often, kesev and keves, simla and salma. Okay, there's a whole long list. I don't know all the words. A whole long list in the Torah where we find a word, and for some reason, in some place, the word is spelled, the letters are interchanged. Again, keves and kesev both mean a sheep, and they both appear in the Torah. What? No, they're not. No. What do you mean? Hey, so here we have the word. You're asking a question. Here it says ki hitzalta nafshi mimavis, and today in Halo we said ki cholatzta nafshi mimavis, and cholatzta is the same exact letters. The only difference is the letters the tzadi and the lalamid are interchanged. So I thought you're coming to suggest is that it's really the same word. We I told you this whole drush about ki chilatzta nafshi mimavis.
That's your idea.
So what ki chilatzta means? You have loosened my nafshi mimavis, my soul from death. You have removed it. you have removed lechalitzas hanoal. You remove my soul from coming in contact with death. You've saved me, I'm alive. You can't say chilatza means to attach to death, because that's no good. So it means ki chilatza, like chalitzas hanoal. You have removed, you have freed my neshama from coming in contact with death, just like the Yavama, she removes the shoe from the yavam. She does chalitzas hanoal. Ki chilatza nafshi mimavis, my neshama was coming in contact with death, and you, Hashem, swooped in and you released it, you pulled it away from death. Okay, but I think when you said today the letters, the word chilatzta, chi la, I'm saying there's a ches and a hey.
Yeah.
Okay, I didn't realize that. I'm living in fantasy island. It's not always because the ches and lamed are interchange. Ki chilatzta. It is a little bit of a stretch. I'm not going to deny that. Chazal do every so often interchange. Rarely exchange a ches for a hey for different reasons. Number one, they look alike, except for the little opening on the right top, and they have the same part of the mouth where the hey and the ches somehow are related in the guttural in the. Okay, so Chazal definitely, beyond a shadow of a doubt, do this every so often in the Gemara. They exchange a ches and a hey. And, okay, then this is really a stretch, is that we do also have it's not so uncommon, the Torah does this, Simla and Salma, Kesev, Keves. And there's another long list of words. So, if we would go so far to say Kihitzalta, and the word chilatzta, if we would be brave, we would say that you have saved. That it's not, doesn't mean to loosen the straps. My neshama was strapped up to death. Someone strapped me up to the Malach HaMavis, and he was taking me away. He tied me up, and the Malach HaMavis was taking me away to the next world. And you, Hashem, loosen those straps to allow me to escape. Okay, that's probably the Pashup Shat. But maybe we can suggest, it's a wild idea, that the word chilatzta is built upon this pasuk in Mizmor Nun Vav of hitzalta. You have saved. You have saved my neshama mimavetz. This was in davening day. Ki chilatzta nafshi mimavetz. Chilatzta. What?
Rescue.
Now, to say this, you got to really, I'm doing two major chidushim,
yeah.
Is to exchange the tzadi and the lamed, which that alone wouldn't bother me so much, because that is very, very good precedent. And the hey and the ches is also, in and of itself, doesn't bother me, because we do that also.
Yeah.
But the two together,
can
you compound the two together? To say the ches, the hey turns into a ches, and then we're going to exchange words. This is a tremendous chiddush to say such a thing. But Baruch Hashem, this is in a very advanced kolo, and just the fact that the people in this kolo can come up with such an idea, even though it may be dead wrong, is a statement of the sophistication of the people here who make that suggestion, Rabbi Chol. No?
Okay.
Okay, so there is Baruch Hashem,
also, Mark has put in
Hamakashim. Oh. Mishanichnas Adam Marbin Bicalories. Marbin Bicalories and cholesterol, high blood pressure. And the visit. In the Kuf Lamets, I guess. We say Halal today. Kichilahatsta Nafshi Mimaves. As any midimus to the end, as the end of one of them is mark, one of towards the beginning. As halach bi'aretzo sachai. It's in the beginning, towards the beginning of halal, the end. So this is a chiddush. It's not so bad, this chiddush. I don't think it's so. It's interesting when you really trigger this idea, the hay and the ches and the tzadi and the lam, it can be interchanged. And then it would be hitza. It's like we said this morning, kihitzalta Hitzalto nafshi nimoves. And look at this in Pasuk Yudal in the Mizmor Nun Vav, it says exactly that. So who says this idea is so far-fetched? Who says it's so far-fetched? The Torah says simla, salma, keves, kesev, another long list of words that we've come across. I wrote down some of them recently. All these, okay, this is a chiddush. You didn't come here, Rabbi Yisai, for just stam, to read the art scroll. You came over here for chiddushim. So we have over here, Baruch Hashem, we start off Adar, Ein Bet Medrash below chiddush. We have here a chiddush, an idea. We have to go talk to a real expert, real in language, and see what they say about this idea. A biblical linguist. All right, now we go to a new Mizmar, Mizmar Nun Zayin. Mizmar Nun Zayin. What does noz mean? What does it mean in Hebrew, noz? What?
Zon.
That's the other way around. Zon. Okay, zon, food. Okay, that's good. That's good. The other way around. That's going backwards. Zon. Hazon es ha'olam kuloi. Okay, we already had more than once incredible. Nothing's a coincidence where the number of the Mizmar has significance. There's no question about it. 57, the number and the word. So you're saying Taka Zon Hazon es ha'olam. Also, it's very good for Rosh Chodesh Adar. Rosh Chodesh Adar. Chazal say that with life comes parnasa. With life, that if a person that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives life, with life he gives parnasa. In Chodesh Adar, Hashem has renewed our lease on life. Because in this Chodesh, we were slated for death. Lahashmid, laharagu, la'abedis, kol ha'yehudim, minar v'yad, zokin, taf, noshim, b'yoyim echad. And when HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he canceled the gzera, it automatically means not only does he cancel the gzera, but he also grants parnasa. He grants, because Hashem doesn't put you in this world to starve. Hashem puts you in this world to, and he provides you with, but there's a gemara that when a child comes to the world, he comes with his kikar. He comes with his loaf of bread. It's also kikar kesef. Haman wanted to pay a talent of gold. And the word kikar, it's not a coincidence. The word kikar, even though it means, the Pshutul Mikra means a certain amount of gold, measure, a volume, sheer, it also means a loaf of bread, a kikar. And a kikar is parnasa. So with our Chodesh Adar, we have to appreciate, is a renewal on life. It is a renaissance. It's rebirth. It's a rebirth for Klal Yisrael. And when there is birth, Ba kikar imay. So zon, what a coincidence, Rosh Chodesh Adar. What other significance is there? We have to see really the Mizmor, and we have to see the Mizmor better to get more an appreciation of what the significance, because we already have a track record that the number of the Mizmor does have significance. Let me look down if I ever wrote down something. I have a little kundris over here about numbers. If I ever wrote down for 57, let me see if I wrote anything down over here. Number 57. Nope, I have 570. Because the famous Vart, this is a Haggadah Vart. Okay, this is almost 570. What's 570? Rasha is Begematria. This is a Vart which if I hear someone say this Vart, I cringe. And I can't believe now that I'm saying it. It makes me sick to my stomach, this Vart. It really does. It really does, because this is not what you should be saying at the Haggadah. The Haggadah, Lil Pesach, time is short. Don't waste your time on these type of erloch. There's a lot heavier things to talk about by the Haggadah. So if someone says this, it really gets me sick. And here I am. Rasha is Begematria, 570. Teeth, Shinov is Begematria, 376. Tzaddik is Begematria, 194. When you take the Rasha, 570, and you take away his teeth, 376, you're left with 194, which is Begematria Tzaddik. Hake es Shin. You ever heard this, Mark? No. Rasha? Hake. Don't say this over by the Seder. Don't say this by the Seder. Don't say learn this in the Koil, because we don't learn this in the Koil. Hake es Shinav. A Rasha is 3. It's 570. You knock out the Shinov, which is 376. and you're left, you dull the shinav, and you're left with 194 at tzaddik. So this mizmor is mizmor nun, is on 57. 57, what's the difference, 57 and a zero? Okay, zeros, what difference does it make if you have $57 million or 57 cents? Just a couple of zeros. Just a couple of zeros, right? So 57, okay, I don't know, there must be something significant. Let's see, lamatzeach al tashreis, do not destroy kama, l'david, michtam. This is a mizma that is worth its weight in gold. We learned that before, michtam means this is precious to David, this mizmar. When did he compose it? Bivorchoi mibnei sha'ul ba'me'ora. Okay, the mizmar itself tells us when it was composed. It was composed when David, he ran away from Shaul when he was in the cave. Rashi, we'll see in a few moments, tells that David had an opportunity to kill Shaul. He ran from David. I think there are two stories like this. But one of the stories that we discuss over here is that David was running away from Shaul, and then it was in the middle of the night, and he knew about his whereabouts, and David went, he went into the camp of Shaul, and he took his garment. Shaul was sleeping. He was sleeping, and he caught the corner of his garment, the tzitzis, and then he escaped, and then he, from far out, he called out and said, "Look what I got. Look what I have. I have here the corner of your garment. You see, I came into your camp, and I severed the corner of your garment. I could have easily..." That's a different story. Okay, there are two stories. I'm sorry?
In the cave.
Yeah. Right, that's the sin of Bamara.
Right.
Not in the camp. Okay, so he was able... We'll see in Rashi. Rashi will go to the story in a little more detail. If we have time, we really go to the Pesukim and Sefer Shmuel. That's really a very big sin. We should really go through and read the Perek that tells us the exact details to get background. Maybe we'll do it one time. And this Mizmah David over here demonstrated to show that he could have killed him. And by not killing him, he showed that he actually was in contact with his body. And he could have just stabbed him and murdered him. And he chose not to do so. That goes to show that David has nothing against Shaul, and Shaul should cut it out. He should stop trying to kill David. David did nothing to him. David has nothing against him. I could have killed you. Look, I didn't kill you, so leave me alone. What are you going? You're chasing after me. During this time, David composed, during the aftermath of that event, David composed this mizmar. Let's see the mitzudos David. To get. Don't destroy me. Don't destroy me. Just like I did not kill you. You owe me. I saved your life. I could have killed you. I did not kill you. So therefore, I beg of you to stop trying to kill me. Let's see the Mitzudos David. Okay, well, some of the first will give you some more background to the story. The Mitzudos David pasuk of al tashreis al. Now al, you know, the Mitzudos David is going to learn not like what I just told you, a little bit differently. Al ki hoya karv liyos nilkod oz biyat shol. Okay, the Mitzudos David starts so that he could have been he could have been killed by Shol. He svalel v'yamar al tashkiseni, do not kill me, bam'ora, lihisaser atzmai bam'ora. Okay, so he's thinking of something a little bit different. Over here, Mitzudas is not getting into the story that I just mentioned. He will see that in Rashi in a moment. Over here, the Mitzudas devil is very similar. David was running away from Shaul, and he hid in a cave. And he cries out to Hashem, this man is trying to kill me. I am hiding in a cave. Please save me. It sounds almost like Rashbi. When Rashbi, he ran away from the government. Rashbi says something nasty about the government. Everything that they do is only for their own benefit. They build bridges to collect taxes. They build bathhouses in order to engage in arayos. Everything that the goyim do, they make believe, oh, look how good we are. Look what we've done for the world. It's all Rashbi said they do everything that they do. They don't give them any credit. They do it all for their own hana. When the government heard that a rabbi was talking like this,
did you say Rashi?
And I do Rashi. I didn't read Rashi yet.
Rashbi.
Rabban Shimon Bar Yochai. So he made this statement. Because he said that, word got out to the government, and they came to kill him. He was a man, he was on the top of their list of the most wanted, because obviously there's a lot more to this story than we know. Obviously Rashbi had enormous influence, had a lot of followers on his Twitter account, and when he made a statement like that, it made a difference. He was influential, and these people...
He was one of the five main Talmudim of Rabbi Akiva.
He was a very influential person. Part of the Mesorah. He was part of the Shalshelis of the Mesorah. Yeah. And he was very influential. And the government, the Goyim, did not like this. They did not want
to
hear this.
How did he get to the somebody must have been a Muslim?
Yes, there are a lot of those people all over the place. There's no shortage of people that are willing to go make to give over, to report to the government, things like this. In any event, he ran and he hid in a cave for 13 years. Okay, so it's interesting over here that according with Rabbi Eliezer, with Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon. So I'm going to say over here, Al Tashchei Sl David, don't disrupt Michtam, Bevorchoi Mibnei Shaul, Bame Oro. Okay, so over here, Rashi doesn't give us the Mitzudois does not give us an elaborate story. He says very simply that David was running away from Shaul and he hid in a cave. And during that time, he hid in the cave, he cried out to Hashem, and he composed this Mizmar. Let's look at Rashi. Rashi is a little lot different. Rashi Lamatzech al Tashchis Koch Kino David Hamizmar Zeh Aleph Pasuk Aleph in Rashi page 498 Koch. This is the name of this Mizmar is called al Tashchis. Right off the bat, Rashi is disagreeing with the Mitzudos. The Mitzudos, if you read carefully, is explaining the word al Tashchis is a request. It is part of the supplication of David. David is begging Hashem, Hashem, please, al tashchis, don't destroy me. That's what the Mitzvah David says. Rashi disagrees. Rashi says, al tashchis is not necessarily the words that David said in his prayer. This is the title. This is a title of the Mizmar. It is in the Mizmar of everyone's. Okay, we're going to say now the Mizmar of Al Tashchis. It's a term that the opening pasuk. It's a whole different way of learning Tehillim. You learn Tehillim, the opening pasuk is Lamnatzeach. Mean no, it's a musical note, or is it? It's an instruction for the conductor, or Lamnatzeach means praise to Hashem. Okay, is the opening pasuk instructional? Is it a title? Is it a Dibur HaMaschil? You know, there are many different opinions. How the word Tzela, is the word Tzela a musical note or does it have a meaning in the Mizmor itself? There are so many different opinions. Here you see this right off the bat. According to the Mitzudeh David, it makes it sound like Al Tashchis, David is davening. David is saying Al Tashchis. When you have to read the words a little bit backwards. When David was running away from Shaul and he was in the cave, he cried out to Hashem. And he said, Hashem, please, al tashchis. This is a quote. Rashi doesn't seem to learn like that. Rashi says, this is the title. The title. Did David actually use those words? Maybe he did, maybe he didn't, but that's not the point. This opening pasuk is the title of what is coming next. It is called Al Tashchis. Look at Rashi. Rashi says, Koch Kina David HaMizmar Hazeh. This is the title that David assigned to this Mizmar. A Mizmar has a title, which is a Chiddush. We don't look at it like that. Everything, a lot of things we take for granted. You know, when you learn Rashi and Chumash, every Rashi begins with a Dibur HaMaschil. It quotes two or three words of the pasuk, and then Rashi begins to comment. Why? How did that come about? How does it come about that you go? That itself is a novel concept. That when you write a commentary, you first quote two or three words of the text, and on those two or three words, you write a comment. I mean, we take it for granted. Because it's been around for over 1,000 years. the first person on record, I always tell this over, on record to invent the principle of commenting by having a Dibur HaMaskel, taking 2-3 words, and then a period, and then making a comment, was Rabbeinu Hananel. Rabbeinu Hananel, in many, many, many Mesachtas, on the side of the Gemara, on the margin, you see teeny little letters, the Perush of Rabbeinu Hananel, which is an amazing commentary, and Rabbeinu Hananel was the first person we have on record from all of the rabbinic literature who employed this new technique called the Dibur HaMaschil. And Rashi obviously copied it. Rashi copied what Rabbeinu Hananel did. This is Lisa. I once heard a lecture on them. I remember probably on whyutorah.org. There's some very good like historical, I don't think so. Not that I'm aware of. Rabbeinu Hananel was the earliest Rishonim. Rashi was not. Rabbeinu Hananel also was very much influenced. The Rambam, I always tell this to you also, the Rambam was very much influenced by Rabbeinu Hananel. And this is a very big secret in the world of the Rambam. When you want to give a shir, klali, and you want to go discuss a shver Rambam, okay, you want to go say a shir to get Rav Chaim, and you want to go through the Rambams, and there's a stira in the Rambam, the shir can only be complete when you give a shir on a difficult Rambam if you study every Rabbeinu Hananel that is relevant to the sugya that you are discussing. Because very, very often, when we have a difficult Rambam, you look in the Rabbeinu Hananel and you understand how he learns the sugya of the Gemara, the earliest sugya, then all the questions on the Rambam just disappear. The Rambam, the Rabbeinu Hananel has chidushim, how he learns not the typical way, you know, a lot of things in the you have a sugya. There's Rashi, there's Tosfos, the Ritva, and the Rashba, different mahalachim in the sugya. Rabbeinu Hananel also has his own mahalach in the sugya. And very often the Rambam follows in the thinking of Rabbeinu Hananel. So if you go to a shir and you hear someone give these sugyas of Dafyomi, and they invite these big Rosh Hashivas, and they give shiurim, and they quote Rambams, and the stir in the Rambam, tefa'encha the Rambam, and if they don't mention Rabbeinu Hananel in the shir, they didn't do their homework. A real Rosh Hashiva will quote Rabbeinu Hananel when he learns through a shver Rambam. Because that's where the secret lies. Because the Rambam, his Rebbe was the Rimigash. Okay, the Rambam, his Rebbe was the Rimigash. I think the Rambam says the only reason the Rambam attributes all of his success to a bracha that he got from, I think, the Rimigash. Is that correct? I think something like that. Asher Yutzak Mayim. There's a whole story about the Rimigash and the Rambam. And I think Rabbeinu Hananel was before the Rimigash. All right, we have to one day learn the history of the Rambam. But getting back over here, this over here is very novel.
Yes, Rabbeinu was a very early
Rashi. So over here we have a very novel idea in Rashi. I really love this Rashi. Kach Kina David HaMizmar HaZeh. Rashi makes it clear as day that Al Tashches is not a quotation from David HaMelech's Siddur. Maybe he said these words, maybe he did not, but that's not the point. This is a title that we ascribe to this Mizmar. Why? Bishvil Shehayu Karov Lamus. He was about to die. David was about to die. And we say Mizmar Ze Lamar Al Tashches Oisi Hashem. When he was about to die, he went and he used these words when he ran away. Now, where did I get? When we come to some portion, okay. But one thing at a time. Okay. Now let's take a look over here before we go further. Let's take a look over here.
It's the same thing with the Chumash, Parashat Vayishlach. Vayishlach Yaakov Malachim. It's not Parashat Yaakov. Parashat
Vayishlach.
Action. Positive or negative.
Every parasha, look, you have parashas, bolok. And yeah, every parasha, parashas Noach, every. Oh, so sometimes the parasha we call it by a name, some by Yetze, by an action. I mean, there's a lot of this very, very hard. 53 parashios, Gan parashios, Gan the Zohar. The Zohar says there are 53 sidorim. 53. The Torah is arranged into 53 sidorim. Even though we have in our Chumash 54, we have 54. The Zohar says 53, and there's a certain tradition as to what we call each parasha. We call this a tradition. We call parashas Noach, parashas Noach. We call parashas Vayetze Yaakov. We don't call it Yaakov. We call it Vayetze. So, and you go through and you try to find the pattern to understand. You have 53 parashios, and to try to understand why they stop where they do, and to understand why the tradition is to call it by a word, which we do, is quite a challenge. Quite a challenge to find a consistent pattern or an alumnusha approach that will answer, put everything in perspective. It's quite a challenge. But I mean, you can't deny that's how it is. And also you can't deny that what we do, what we have today, it was not always the way it was. They were different. There are different. Like we learned, the Rabbeinu Bachya and the Sefer HaChinuch, they write openly that in the Chumash Shemois there are 12 parashios. We have 11. We have 11 parashios, and the Sefer HaChinuch, Rabbeinu Bachya, write there are 12. What do you mean 12? Where's the 12 parasha? So everyone struggles. So we learned last week. Some said that Parashas Shemot, Parashas Mishpatim is 2. Some say Parashas Kisisa is 2. And there's another opinion. I forgot which other parasha. So obviously there were different traditions. There were different traditions as how things go. What you call them. I mean, what do you call the name of the parasha? Okay, there are different traditions. Today, we live in the global melting pot. And today, this become an industry standard that's been globalized. And there are 54 parashios in every single Chumash, whether you like it or not. And no one's going to deviate from that today. That's the way it is. There are 54 parashios. How do you reconcile that with the Zohar that says Gan? He says it many, many times. He repeats this concept many, many times. Gan parashios. I don't know. There are 100 answers, but whatever. You know, it's not. Nothing's going to really start to give you really.
I still think the answer is always the old Chumash. I told you one time. If you take a look at the end of every parasha, that it says how many psukim in the parasha. At the end of Nitzavim, it doesn't say how many psukim, but at the end of Vayelech, it says 7.
So you want to say Nitzav Vayelech goes together?
I mean, that struck me right away. Kobi,
Kobi, there are 6 different parashas that we read together. 6. There are 6 different parashas that can be read together. Vayachal b'kudei, Tazriya mitzayra, Kedoshim emar, Matas masei, rarely, Chukas bolok, Nitzav Vayelech. What I leave out, probably left out 1 or 2 of them. There are a total of 6 possibilities. 6 possibilities when you can read together. Okay, but that's over here. He gives it a title. It's a very interesting expression. He says, okay, let's see over here what it says over here in the Malbum. Well, first, let's.
The way,
yeah?
The story of the Bamba Ara shows that it's Sneut of Shaul.
Right.
He had to go to the last Sechet Raglau.
Based on Kisei.
He didn't do it
outside in public. He did it
inside.
And he covered his entire body. Right, extremely modest. Look, in Shulchan Aruch, the degree in Shulchan Aruch, the basic halacha, you read the halachas of the Beis HaKisei, it's shocking. I mean, no one, I can't be, there's anyone, I don't know anyone today that but it's in Shulchan Aruch. It's in Shulchan Aruch. It says he's supposed to do A, B, C, D. Come on, there's no one that's doing what it says in Shulchan Aruch. When a person goes to the Beis HaKisei, I mean, the degree of tznius. So what's the pshat? Shulchan Aruch. I once there was a teenager who gave all greased out, greased out, and he's learning and he's like a yekka, like everything. He took everything very literally, and he used to come and drive me crazy, ask me a lot of questions. So I gave him I tried to answer him, but many times he says to me, but it says Beferush in the Shulchan Aruch and in the Mishneh Berurah, this is the halacha, and no one does it. I said, I don't know what to tell you. But it says, look what it says in Shulchan Aruch. Show me someone who does what it says. So what am I supposed to tell him? I said, Chayodim, it says there are things also no one does. Look in the kids, also everyone says, so I says there's such a concept is puk chazi ma amar devar. Okay, that's an Aramaic expression which means go out and see what people do. There is the written Shulchan Aruch, and there is the unwritten Shulchan Aruch. I don't know if you noticed in the FJJ there's a whole thing about mezuzahs. Yeah. Mezuzahs. If you read some of the stuff, okay, there's a lot to say, and there's a very big problem about what's been written over there is, if you read very carefully the articles, that some of the mezuzahs are not being written lefi the Mishnah Berurah. Okay, so they give you the impression that if your mezuzah is not in conformance 100% with the Mishnah Berurah, the mezuzah is pasul. It's possible, and it's not true.
It's not true.
That has already been. Is so. It's not lefi the Mishnah Berurah. So it's now in the Beis Hakisei. Do you do everything it says to do in the Shulchan Aruch? Like when you go to the Beis Hakisei, it says befer on Shulchan Aruch. So you go say that you're an Avarian and you're not an Orthodox Jew because you don't follow literally word for what it says. So it's not. So you don't do what it says. The minig, there are other mahalchim, even though in a chanani it says Shulchan Aruch, and we follow the Shulchan Aruch, we bow down Shulchan Aruch, and we do. It's complicated. Halach is complicated. Halach is very complicated. Rav Moshe Feinstein, not every psak halacha that Rav Moshe paskind was accepted. It's a fact.
Yeah.
And every single gadol b'Yisrael, and you go through all of the classic svarim. The classic svarim throughout the ages, there are things that Gedolei Yisrael said with their full heart and soul, and they believed in, that are just not accepted. And there are other approaches that are legitimate, and it's not necessarily in print in front of your eyes, but it's out there. And there's been a lot of pushback from what they've presented in a newspaper that everyone gets a free subscription to, and it's put in front of and it's put right in front of your face to give you the impression that all of you mezuzahs are apostle. It's not true. It's totally not true. Just because there's a lot more, which I'm not allowed to say what I know, but just what it says in the newspaper. The whole argument is lefi the Mishnah Berurah. Lefi, read the news. Lefi the Mishnah Berurah. Okay, the Chofetz Chaim is kodesh kodoshim. The Chofetz Chaim would tchias hameisim. There wouldn't be a person that wouldn't come and bow down to him. But guess what? There are certain things in the Mishnah Berurah that were not accepted as ming ma'akev. There's a tradition, they have today the Chassam Sofer. The Chassam Sofer was the Gadol Hadar, beyond belief. Mimoyshe v'yad Moshe leikom k'moyshe. They have photocopies of his tefillin. No one in this room would buy his parashios for your grandchildren. No one. No. Even if you wouldn't know, I'll show you the parashios of the Chassam Sofer. You would like to buy this for your grandchild, No. We can do better. You can go to the Chassam Sofer, the Gadol Hadar, It's a horrible thing. It's a horrible thing just to shoot from the hip and say bang 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 bang, treif posel, no good. Oh, it says in the Mishnah Berurah. Oh, really? You want me to show you a million things that it says in the Mishnah Berurah? And since when did you pay attention to what it says in the Mishnah Berurah?
If it was a treif butcher shop, they would say, oh, there's a treif butcher shop on 13th Avenue. No, they would say XYZ shop. Here they just came blanket, Coney Island Avenue J. Come on.
Horrible. And what's more horrible is, it's plain poshet sheker. It's plain, poshut, total sheker. So it's not lefi the Mishnah Berurah. So it's not lefi the Mishnah Berurah. Okay? Guess what? There's a whole world out there of halacha. There's a whole world out there of halacha. We follow, we live in a Mishnah Berurah generation, absolutely. You're a Ben Torah, you want to be Mahadar, you know how much a mezuzah costs today? You got by name, someone told you a mezuzah, he bought a new mezuzah, $280.
One mezuzah?
A mezuzah, $280.
One mezuzah.
In the last two years, the price of mezuzahs have literally tripled. So why don't they write a whole article shooting the dealers who have jacked up the price, instead of telling everyone in Flatbush that you're an avarian because your mezuzahs are possible, because it's not to see the Mishnah Berurah, which a lot of things not so clear. Some of the crazy over there, it's possible. And there's no solution for you people. Excuse me. That's how you talk. You're not providing a solution. And the solution is to go buy mezuzahs for $300. Who could afford $300? Why don't you go write an article that it's not fair that what they're doing, the moichrim and the dealers are jacking up the price, and they're giving you these crazy excuses because everyone today is a gavir and everyone died during COVID. You know, everyone died. The whole world died. And every person who died is getting a sefer Torah written for them. Don't you know that? Everyone died. Everyone during COVID died. And everyone now who died is getting a Sefer Torah written for them. And all the Sefer are busy writing Sefer Torah, so there's no one to write mezuzah. So the mezuzah is made law 5 times. You believe that?
No.
You believe that? Baloney. Yeah.
The proper rate,
they don't come around collecting, they don't have jobs.
So appoint Meshgiach on the, before they sell a mezuzah, let them check.
Okay.
The official one.
They Oh, that's what's going. You see, you don't know what's really going on. You're touching.
Is it not the clothes industry?
Unfortunately, certain things. I happen to be in the wrong place at the wrong time, and a lot of information was presented, which is very disturbing. And you just touched upon something that you didn't even realize you just touched upon. That's not the point I want to make. The point you want to make over here is that. In halacha, we follow the Shulchan Aruch, we follow the Mishnah Berurah, but yet there's also an element in halacha called puk chazi ma amar devar. Go out into the world and see what people do. That is also a chelik of Shulchan Aruch. If thousands and thousands of people have mezuzahs that are written in a certain way, that are not in conformance with the way the Mishnah Berurah recommends certain letters, certain tzuras ha'ois, okay. The Mishnah Berurah says to it one way, if you want to write a new mezuzah going forward, but to go and just wipe out the whole world, that's not part of halacha. Halacha is puk chazima in every area of Shulchan Aruch. It's a very difficult gray area of when something is actually treif, when something is actually 100% shalaika halacha, and when there are things, it's not shalaika halacha. It's not what it says in the Mishnah Berurah. Puk chazi ma'amad devar.
Also, somebody.
In every single area of halacha, mamish b'li yoytzim nakal, you're gonna find the things like this. That's the way it is. That's the way it is. So in every area. Okay, enough said, let's go further. Let's take a look over here at the
going back to the telephone, I tell you something. I was in the army. When we moved from one place to another, the first thing they dug at bathroom for the soldiers. This is the first thing. It should be
Kavoit Habriyos.
It's a whole pasuk, but
right.
It was real.
Kavoit Habriyos. Kavoit Habriyos.
So we learned from Shaul how he was.
He was tsanua.
Unbelievable.
Okay. Yeah. Absolutely. So look, you know, they serve Aaron Lichtenstein. Zechet Zag Levracha. And so someone was masked at him. So you know what he said? I was totally shocked with the hespit. Aaron Lichtenstein is one of the founders of the Kehila, the community, Gush Etzion.
Right.
Okay, it's a big, big kehila, and it's known to be modern, like very like modern Orthodox, a certain hashkafa, and he found it with Amital. It's a big, a whole big, big. It's a big, 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 massively, it's a whole community, massively large community, Gush Etzion, and he's the father of the Rosh Hashiva of Tar Vadas, Ravi Yitzchak Lichtenstein.
Okay, he's the son-in-law of Rabbi Yosha Bessel.
Right. Yeah.
Rav Aaron Soloveitchik was the prize son-in-law, right? Of course, I thought that's a given. Okay, you're right, is the prize son-in-law of Yosha Bar Soloveitchik. Okay, he sat by him. Rav Rakefet, Darish talks about now he sat on his side, his prize Talmud. He always talks about him. Why wasn't he the successor to Rav Yosha Bar Soloveitchik? Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, Zecher Tzadik Levracha, was a brilliant, 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 beyond belief, a mind like none other. And when he passed away, okay, he passed away, so they published books in his honor and hespedim. So I heard someone give a hesped over here, and he said, I want to tell you something very special about him. That during, I don't know if it was the War of Independence. Couldn't be. I don't know. It has to be much later. I don't know when he was there. The Yom Kippur War. He went out, and he gave every soldier he could find toilet paper. Mm-hmm. He went out. He was Moiser Nefesh to go and distribute to the Chayolim toilet paper, because he knew they're going to be out in war, in battle for a very long time. And what are they going to do? What are they going to do? And he had the insight. He had the sensitivity.
He was one of the first. Arya Levine and one other.
Yeah.
Kippur.
And his issue was torn newspapers in the bathrooms.
Right, on Yom Kippur. On Yom Kippur, because there were people who went, who came. There were people who came to daven, and they came into the kehila for Yom Kippur the whole day, and they would be there the whole day, and they needed so Rav Kalman, you're touching upon a very big over here, that this whole background over here to Shaul, David did not take advantage. It's a very interesting thing. David, Shaul, okay, this is part of the story when Shaul went into the cave. Okay, he mentioned over here, okay, there's really more to the story over here. We have to come a little later on. When Shaul, in that story, when Shaul was in the cave and he went into the cave in order to engage in the tznius, okay, and he engaged in tznius to a very great degree. David did not take advantage of him at this moment of vulnerability. Specifically, right, but it's also b'hashkacha, when a person engages in tznius, you know, there are Geneva Conventions of war. Right? Whether the world follows them or not, I highly doubt.
Right.
We know the whole thing is just a joke anyway. They do whatever they want to go do. But theoretically, what are the Geneva Conventions all about? Is you don't take advantage of victims, of people, at extreme moments of vulnerability. It's built on a principle.
I think in World War I, they had an agreement, the snipers don't shoot anybody that's doomed, mainly doomed. I just saw this.
There's such a principle. It's this not to be ignored, that David praises himself with Shaul that he was vulnerable, and I didn't kill him. Well, b'hashkacha pratis, that can happen in a million types of situations. It's not a coincidence. Nothing is a coincidence. That where David showed that he did not take advantage was specifically at a time when Shaul went out of his way to do something in the laws of tznius. In tznius, in going to the Beis HaKiseh, exposing himself and doing this activity. That's not a coincidence. Shaul could have been doing anything. Okay, Shaul could have been davening. Shaul could have been in the middle of Shemona Esrei. Shaul could have been in the middle of there was another story when he was just sleeping. That's another story. There's another story when Shaul was sleeping. But Shaul could have been engaged in there are a million different activities when he could have been engaged, when he could have been vulnerable, and David, I didn't take advantage. It is not a coincidence that is specifically when he was engaged in this activity, oh, look, here I did not take advantage of you. That is a lesson for us, that even though we may not be such tzaddikim like David, and we have enemies, and we could not wait, we can't wait to get rid of them soon enough, and nuke them, but yet there are certain, you know, the Geneva Conventions, there's some chokhmah behind it. You can really question, or you can really, you know, when a person is vulnerable and does not have an opportunity to escape, or whatever the case is, this has to be discussed and understood on a very deep level. What is a Torah hashkafa in eliminating your enemy? Now we're dealing with Amalek. We're dealing with Amalek now. Parshat Zochar, Eish, Oslucham Amalek, and Kimochoyem Chazecher Amalek. Question, this is a very tough question. What are the rules? What are the rules? Shaul lost the Malchus because he did not kill women and children. So women and children have to be eliminated. How? When? When they're in the Beis HaKisei? What are the rules? I don't know, what are the rules? They're in the Beis HaKisei, so that's the best time to eliminate them. Kill the mother, the children in front of the mothers. Lo yumsu avoy salbar, by Khan Sipar. What are the rules? I have no idea. We need the Melech HaMashiach, who will be the one that will, one of the things that the Melech HaMashiach is obligated to do is to be Mekaye Mechias HaMolek. That is one of the obligations, is to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash and then wipe out Amalek. What are the rules? What are the rules? This is one of the reasons why today the whole concept of Mechias HaMolek Mizman HaZeh is not possible. It's not only because it's not possible today because if we would go and we just can't get and kill. Let's say we could. Let's say no one's going to stop us from wiping out Amalek today. What are the rules? Are there certain procedures of brutality of how exactly you do it? Look over here at David and Shaul. He was here in the Beis HaKisei. You're in the Beis HaKisei. Now is not the time. You're a roidef. Shaul's not a roidef. He certainly is a halachic roidef. He is a roidef. So, but you're in the Beis HaKisei. The Beis HaKisei, it's time out. I don't know. I have no clue. This is one of the reasons why we have a difficulty in dealing with Mechias Melech, because we need a Melech HaMashiach to teach us the rules of Mochoy Emche Ezecher Amolek. Let's go further. Let's look at the Malbum. Malbum Pasuk Aleph. Malbum Lamasech Al Tashches. All the Hakdam is very important. Al Tashches. Yan Shal Inyan Zechi Be'oid Mizmo Lekamon Simen Kof Membeis. This is not, now here we're already, Baruch Hashem, we're up to, we're already 57, so with a lot of cross-referencing. We're getting over here to Mizan, we learn about this topic, we will learn about this topic, and it's cross-referencing. And we're going to learn about this story later on, again, in Mizma Kuf Membeis, V'sham Diber Mitzorosai Levad, Upo Diber, there we're going to talk about when David ran away from Shaul, and he hid in a cave, and Upo Diber Gami Masha This mizmar is going to add a new dimension to the story. It's not just how David was in pain where he was running for his life. This mizmar is going to present an opportunity that David had to put an end to his problem, but he did not take advantage. And that's what we're going to learn in the few psukim from now. Tzien mizmar zeb b'milois al tashches, and he goes on also, he tzien means, basically he gives it a title. This is pretty much what Rashi said. He gives it a title with the words al tashches. Shekhin tovas al zeh l'shoyim hashchosa, v'yomer David al tashches. David said, do not destroy. Now, in other words, I didn't say correctly. According to Rashi, and according to the Malbum, when he calls al tashches, this is an instruction. This is a command. David gave a command to his men, to his soldiers. Do not kill. Do not press the trigger. Do not push the trigger to eliminate the Mashiach Hashem. According to the Mitzudas David, Al Tashches is where David said to Hashem, Hashem, don't destroy me. It's like al tashchis seini, even though it doesn't say the word ni. Al tashchis Hashem, don't destroy me. According to Rashi and the Mitzudos, al tashchis is a title we're giving to this mizmor, and the reason is, and the term is David gave a command to his soldiers: do not take advantage of Shaul's vulnerability to eliminate him. That's what he says. Look in the parentheses.
Right.
What?
David have a right to kill Shaul?
Yeah, I think so.
Shaul was a roidef.
He was a roidef.
Yeah, but Shaul was the king, right? So maybe he, David's obligation.
Shmuel anointed him. Shmuel anointed him as the new melech. Shmuel was a Navi. And Shmuel said that the Malchus has been taken away from Shaul and has been transferred to you. And now Shaul was a roidef. It would appear that al pi halacha he was permitted. I'm making that assumption. That he was permitted, he was anointed the new melech by a navi, and you know, it's all these things are very hard for us to appreciate. And now Shaul's a roidef, and he has the right to do so. And David said, "No, I give a command al tashchis, don't do so." Or if you don't want to say what I'm saying, you can say that David the nesoyin was so great. Let's say al pi halacha you're not allowed to kill. What is a person's natural instinct? Someone trying to kill me. So you fight back, you kill him. What?
He was running, following him.
Who should have run away? He couldn't. He was surrounded. He was. They were tracking him. In hot pursuit. David.
He went into Shaul's camp, right?
He did that. That's exactly the nobility of David that he was Moisa Devish to do exactly that. That's all part of David's nobility, that a regular person would kill Shaul on the spot. Or would run away. And here David Adarabi, he was Moiser Nefesh to go to show, I have nothing against you. That indeed is part of David's greatness. Because the average person would never do this. The average person would just shoot to kill. And he would argue in court, I have all the right to do so. All the right to do so. Unless you live in America where if you kill the criminal, they'll lock you up. They'll lock you up.
These two words, Al Tashchet, is also from the Torah. Ki tesel milchama Al Tashchet et Eitzan in Torah.
Bal Tashchis. Bal Tashchis. It's true, Bal Tashchis.
So you go according to rules. So
halacha.
He comes here.
You follow halacha.
I'm following those rules.
I follow the halacha. Okay, there are many different ideas. Let's see the parentheses. Shekein tofas ze al ze lashon hashchosa vayomer David al tashchi sehu, do not, he gave a command, do not kill him. Umizmo ze neplak l'shnei chalokim, two different portions. Tefila she yinotzel al pasaches. Okay, in the first, this is very important, Malmi explains to you the layout, until the first seven psukim, David was praying to Hashem, Hashem, don't let me die in his hands, base. Midaber mima, the second half is what really makes this unique. Because later in Mizmor Kuf Mem Beis, there's going to be a repetition of what David was mispal in this dangerous time. But it's only over here that it says over here, Midaber al Mimash, at the end of this Midrash, Shaloi Horages Shaul, V'chavash Yitzroi, he held himself back, V'zeho Yiloi L'chavoid V'sif Eres. This is a very big koyach of credit to David. Al ad sheshaul hikir es sidkasoy ve'emunasoy. This is an amazing thing, because in life you don't get credit for nothing. In life, no one will ever give you credit for anything. Only Hashem gives credit. Here you have a hechatimsa, a very rare event in the life of David, where David indeed, Shaul cried to David. He says, "You're right. I know you're a tzaddik." Shaul acknowledged David's greatness. And that is an amazing, amazing thing where this story, it brought out the best in both of them. This story brought out the best in David, and it brought out the best in Shaul, that Shaul was able to acknowledge. See, that was Shaul's entire problem. It was almost like a tikkun for Shaul. Shaul lost his malchus because he failed to acknowledge his sins. Shaul committed a couple of sins, but the two primary sins were Shmuel told him, you're going to go to this location and you're going to bring a communal sacrifice for all the people there. But you wait. You wait until I get there. And deliberately, Shmuel didn't come. And there was enormous public pressure to get it over with already. Bring the carbon, we all want to go to work. And Shmuel failed. He caved into public pressure. If this is leadership. Leadership is not to cave into public pressure when you know it's the wrong thing. And then when Shmuel confronted him, he denied it. So it's bad enough. No, the people always get into trouble. This is the Yisoid in politics with the cover-up. This is a fact. Okay, Michal will write a whole book for you on this. All politicians do not lose their job because of their crimes. They all lose their reputation, their legacy because of the cover-up. If they would only say chatasi, 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 then in America, they're very forgiving in America, very forgiving country. But the cover-up is where they get in trouble. This is nothing new. When Shaul, he
denial.
In denial and denial and cover-up, Shaul went and he made a big mistake. And when Shmuel said, "Why didn't you wait for me?" instead of confessing, he gave Shmuel a hard time. Well, you know, the people, they pressured me.
Today we call that throwing the people under the bus.
They pressured me, azoy nazoy. Excuse me, I told you to wait for me. Admit, acknowledge that you have failed. He failed to acknowledge. Same thing with when, why didn't you kill Agag? The second and the other mistake, he was told to kill Melchemes HaMalek, and he did not kill Agag, he did not kill the animals. And Shmuel said, "Why did you disobey a direct order?" Well, you know, the animals and this and this and this and this and this.
Excuses.
Strike two, you're out. All the other things. Strike two. The main problem, Farshim says, because he failed. We'll teach you. You made a mistake. You're in training. You are melech in training. In MIC. MIT. You go to MIT. In Boston, MIT. A melech in training. You only grow through making mistakes. But there's one mistake you can't make. You can't be in denial, and you can't cover up your crimes. Then you're eliminated from you don't get your degree. David, when he did an avera, he did a much worse avera. He was nichshel with an eshes ish. Eshes ish. And when Nosan Hanavi said, "David, what's going on over here?" What did David say? The first words came out of his mouth, "Chotasi." That's incredible. Who can do that? It's not human. Not human when people accuse you of a crime and to say chotasi. I couldn't do it. Just to say right off the bat, chotasi? Impossible. David said, "Oh, this is our man. Shaul was unable to say chotasi, but yet he learned his, he did tshuva. Because when David said to him, look, I didn't kill you. Shaul said, "You're right. Chotasi. You're right. You're more righteous than me." He acknowledged. That was where he restored his greatness. That was the tikkun for Shaul.
But it was too late
in Echanami. It was whatever that looked, by Hashem, nothing is too late. It's too late, whatever. He didn't get the Malchus. Who says the Malchus was meant for him to be forever anyway? Lo yasur shevet mi Yehuda u'michoykek mi bein raglav. The Malchus anyway was not necessarily supposed to go to Shevet Binyamin. A lot of tough questions. Look at the story of Purim. The story of Purim is Mordechai and Esther from Shevet, descendants of Ish Yimini. The story of Purim is a story that goes back to Shaul and how they prevailed. It is how Mordechai and Esther prevailed, only in the zuchus of Shaul. The beginning of the Megillah begins with what? The Klal Yisrael, what did they do? They were Nene Misu'udas Achashverosh. The end of the Megillah, in essence, is Klal Yisrael acknowledged Chotasi. Chotasi. It wasn't Lech Kinois es Kol HaYehudim, Hanimsim B'shur V'tzumu Lai V'Altoch V'Altishtu. They, in essence, by doing Teshuvah, they said Chotasi. We made a big mistake. Where did they learn that from? Shaul. Shaul, at the end, said to David, Shaul said to David, Chotasi, at the very end. That's what the Malm over here says. It's a very beautiful Malm. Mizmo zenechal shnechalokim tefilo shignesom min apasiches beiz medabim asher loy horeg ha-shol v'chovash yitzhol. And look what it says here. V'zeh l'chov l'usferis. Ad she-shaul higer es tzidkosai v'emunosai. Everyone ends as a big hero with this mizmar. Everyone's a hero. David was a hero. He didn't kill Shaul. And Shaul's a hero because he says, Taka, David, like what Tamar said, Tzadka Mimeni. But what Yehuda said, when Yehuda said, Tzadka Mimeni, it's also part of the same story, the same concept of being able to confess, which is really, really superhuman, really superhuman. Let's take a look over here, at the
Radak. What does the phrase mean, Ad Sheshaul Higer? What do you mean, Ad? What's the Ad?
Until, ultimately, Ad over here means ultimately. At the end, after this, after David said he came, Shaul came around to say to David, you're a tzaddik. Okay, let's learn over here the Radak before we finish off this thing, the Radak. The Radak is the Hagdama is always the most fun. It's always page 499. The Hagdama always captures the essence of the entire Mizmar. 499. 499 bottles of beer on the wall. Okay. Lamatseach al tashreis. Kvar kasu betchilas ha-sefer. Ki loinoida etzlenu hayoim inyan hamilois asher b'roshi ha-mizmar. This is an incredible Radak. We do not know the words in the beginning of the Mizmarim, this is the Radak being a Rishain, Rav David Kimchi. We do not know the words Lamatseach, Al Tashres, La David, Nichtam. We have all these interesting words, and all of the commentators, they always struggle to give us a more precise definition of these words. V'achiluk asher b'neim, m'bnei mo, hoyot chilos ha-mizmar, ze b'milos ha-elev, mizmar achem b'milos acheres. Why is this Mizmar, La David Mizmar, Mizmar La David, Nichtam, Al Yelas HaShachar, Al Yoynas Elem? If everyone has these ideas, and they tell you it's a musical instrument, it's this and it's that. V'hine elu hashloisha ha-mizmar. The next three that we're going to learn: nun zayin, nun ches, nun tes, chasmuchim, tchilasam. They all begin with the words al tashches. So what does that mean? Part of the mystery. The inyan ha-mizmarim ha-elu b'inyan David im shol. The Efsher, okay, also he's saying we don't know with certainty what was going through David's mind when he wrote these words, but Efsher, Shehoyu l'inyin zeh techilosam al tashches, shelo yashchisehu biyad shol. So he's learning like the Mitzudos David, where these words are words that have come out of the mouth of David to Hashem. Mi Omar el Mi. We learn in the Malbum, and really Rashi alluded to this, Mi Omar al Mi, David Omar el Anoshov. David said to his men, don't kill Al, who is the subject, don't kill Shaul. No, Radak disagrees. Mi Omar al Mi, David Omar el Hashem. David is praying to Hashem, do not allow me to die in the hands of Shaul. We found with hashchasa. Hashchasa is a term that means don't let me die. Hashchasa can mean don't let me lose my job. Don't let me lose my benefits. Don't let me lose my citizenship. Don't let me lose my family. The word, what is hashchasa? What is valuable to a person? So he says the word hashchasa means death. Where is the precedent? Shomar David el Avishai kisherot zelohame says Shaul. He's playing with. He's like, when Avishai David's right hand man wanted to kill Shaul, al tashchi sehu. But that's not what it means here in this mizmar. The Radak is just using that reference al tashchi sehu to prove to you that the word hashchasa is a word that is reserved for death. Avishai was about to kill Shaul, and David said, do not kill him. From that we learn the word hashchasa is a word that is used in the vocabulary of death. Now, when it says this word here in the beginning of this mizmar, David is speaking to Hashem, Mi Amar Alami, David Amar Al Hashem, don't kill me! Don't let me die in the hands of these people. V'zeh ha-mizmar amoro David be'od shahoyo huva nashav b'yar kiseh ha-mo'ara, in the edge of the cave, uvo shol lehoseich esraglov sham. David found himself in the same, David was hiding in the Beis Akiseh. And who walks into the Beis Akiseh? Shol! Uh-oh! This is not a good hiding place. The Secret Service, they're going to sweep the bathroom. Right? When the president, I would imagine that when the president goes to the Beis Akiseh, the Secret Service, they sweep the room. You ever watch anything on any video clip? Okay? They sweep. Like I always, the funniest clip I tell is with Clinton. Clinton, there's no president in the history of the United States that enjoyed fast food more than Bill Clinton. He has an incredible yetzara for chazarai. And they were traveling to some chveis, some important meeting, and Bill Clinton said, I'm hungry. I want to go stop off at McDonald's. Just like I do when I go to Boston. Go to McDonald's. So the Secret Service says, Mr. President, when you go to a McDonald's, we have to go there a month before. To sweep the whole place and put in security and cameras and check out the people, security check. We need a month. You just can't stop off. I don't care. I'm the president. We're going to McDonald's. Tell the driver to pull off and go to McDonald's. I'm the boss. Who's the boss here? I'm the boss. Huh? So they pulled over. They did a very quick sweep of the place and the people in McDonald's could not believe for the life of them. Who's here? And then when he finished eating, he said to his Secret Service, can you give me a toiva? Can I borrow some money? I don't have any cash on me to pay for my thing. So David was over here, Shaul was hiding. David was hiding in basically a Beis Akiseh. And in walks Shaul. And he walks in with his men. They certainly swept the area. When he sees that I'm here, what are they going to do to me? They're going to kill me. So David said to Hashem, don't let them kill me. Okay, so this pretty much covers the Hagdama. There's more to it. If you want to look very quickly, look at, let's see. Over here. Oh, no, we'll leave with this for now. It's enough. Okay. All right, so Mishnah, tomorrow we will go and we will proceed into the substance of this Mizmar. Okay.